start with Glistening's question. I'll read it to get going. Okay, the question is about taking perspectives. She says, I'm finding that the further from zone one I try to shift my focus, the more elusive the actual perspectives seem to be. I seem to be able to inhabit a zone two perspective fairly easily, then a zone three perspective seems to be a kind of extension of my zone one, plus its intersections with others, zone one and two, communicated and resonated states. I'm finding that zone four is a little more difficult to really identify with. Is this an inherently awkward perspective to inhabit, or is it perhaps because I have not really studied the methodologies which this perspective gives rise to enough to really get at it? Also, it feels to me that even when I'm identifying with and inhabiting these dimension perspectives, I cannot avoid doing so from the perspective of myself as the one doing the perspective taking. Is it to be expected, or do I just need to practice more? Is it truly possible to engage a perspective as it is rather than as I see it? Thanks, guys, and blessings to Clint and his family. Well, thank you for the blessings, first off, Glistening. And, yeah, this is a great question. It really does get to the heart of a number of the issues sort of that we have to coordinate as we deepen our understanding of the zones in relation to ourselves, in relations to zones as perspectives and human perspective taking. So I'll take first pass at this, and Ali will come in and clarify some things at the end. Let's see. Let's kind of go through this from the top. So yes, first, let me say that it is normal. It is what is expected, as she says at the bottom here, to struggle with this stuff, to just come in, you know, 2 weeks ago and learn about, in a deep way, the theoretical distinctions that give rise to the zones, and then to recognize sort of, you know, in the turn of a week that, you know, we're being sentient beings with four-dimension perspectives, and now there's eight. So, yeah, that's a bit of a jump, both cognitively, theoretically, and sort of what's coming out more here, more like an experiential sense of embodying or seeing from these perspectives in a quote-unquote accurate way. And first off, I mean, and I don't think Glistening is doing this, but I would suggest to nobody that we radically separate those two. That really at this level, what I've seen is that sort of your cognitive mapping capacity and your capacity to sort of see these things, these perspectives arising, you know, as aspects of yourself, or, you know, as you look through them on other aspects in the world, that those two things sort of really show up on the scene together, and they mutually inform and mutually interrelate. And as one grows stronger, the other, you know, might dip down. Because you can't track, for example, like the new theoretical complexity, but then it can pop back up, and they really do exist in relation. So anyone who's struggling with this, as Glistening is suggesting that she is in regards to some aspects here, that's perfectly normal and perfectly fine. So let's start with this comment on a zone three perspective, which she says seems to be a kind of extension of my zone one plus its intersections with other zone ones and twos. This to me, there's a couple of things here, but it sounds like we're holding the notion that a person, because a person can relate to their sort of selfness, their I-ness, you know, as the upper left quadrant. So obviously they're the upper left quadrant is zone one and zone two, that it seems to imply that we're defining a person, an individual whole one, more as zone one and zone two. And I don't sense that you are defining them that way, at least not in an explicit way or in a reductionistic way. But I think if we recognize that if we span that out to a person, a sentient being, let's say a human, because we're talking about taking perspectives as well, to an eight zone conception, you recognize that zone three is not sort of the result of some summation or subtraction. If we were going to conceive of it like that, which is fine if we recognize what we're doing, I would actually suggest that it's more a zone one minus. So a zone one, because we're talking about, you know, interiors, an inside view of individual interiors. So when I say minus, what you get with zone three is how that interior arising is for you, minus everything that's not experienced in resonance with another person or persons. And that's what kind of sort of gets you to zone three. Not, again, that I'm recommending we do this in a strictly like a mathematical kind of way, but since it was put in that way, I would suggest it's that, rather than zone one plus intersections, and particularly leaving out the zone two sort of notion of intersections. I mean, zone three is about shared interiors. Their shared interiors viewed from or experienced from the inside as they're known by acquaintance, and how those relate to a zone one individual interior seen from the inside is basically better captured with that notion of your individual interior minus everything that's not particularly intersecting with this particular other member or members of a we. And that why we don't use it as that mathematical equation is because that changes. Every time you're looking at, you turn your awareness to a different we, the stuff you'd be subtracting out, right, from your zone one is different. So the stuff that I have in my experience that doesn't resonate with Ali's, for example, is one set of things, and that certainly changes in every moment as Ali and I both individually, you know, arise as agencies in communion. But if we turn then to, you know, the we I have with my father, who incidentally might walk back into the hotel room and distract me, so I apologize in advance if that happens, but then we're subtracting out a different set of intersections, and that's just one way to look at it. But again, I'm more or less going there because of how this question was worded, not because I'm strongly suggesting that be the manner in which we sort of locate or relate to zone three. And when it comes to zone two or four, and glistening particularly focuses on zone four. Give me one second, guys. I'm sorry. My hotel internet just acted like I'm not on the internet anymore. One second. I'm making sure this is still recording. And Ali, you can still hear me, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to ignore this. I don't think it knows what it's doing. All right, it won't let me ignore it. Okay. Fingers crossed. I think we're still recording. When it comes to zone two and zone four, yeah, for some people, I'd say for most people, in my experience working with students on this, those are a little bit more difficult to step into, sort of look through, get in touch with, as it were. And it's basically because those horizons simply define those sort of the phenomenology of zone one and three, sort of the felt immediate arisings of individual and shared interiors as known from the inside. It's that phenomenology plus history or plus time. And that's one of the definitions or one of the perspectives that Ken gave for understanding what he called zone two in the excerpts, which, as you know, in the old style of zone numbering, he was referring to all the outside zones in the left-hand quadrants, or in our numbering system, zone two and four. And those are generally more difficult to identify with, mostly because they require that component of history or time. And it doesn't mean that to actually locate, take a zone four perspective on, say, a relationship, or a zone two perspective on yourself, it doesn't mean that you have to start now, right, look at yourself from the outside, or your relationship from the outside, and then wait until a whole bunch of time has passed. That's not, don't take it in that sort of strict manner. This also includes just sort of a looking back at past patterns of both individual interiors and shared interiors. And when you look from zone four, what you're revealing are simply those patterns. Those patterns of meaning making, and sometimes you can associate them with a particular state, sometimes you can associate them with a particular structure, you know, and you can do that because you have a knowledge of those states and or structures. And that's one way that those perspectives typically show up for folks who, like all of you, who are working with the integral map to help with this. Certainly not required. And for zone four for relationships, again, you can look back at the past history of intersections. Say, you know, pick the person you're closest to, pick your partner, pick your best friend like Ali, and say, how is it that Ali and I have related and all the sort of times that we've related and what are sort of the patterns when he acts like this and has this meaning and when I show up like this and have this meaning, how have they historically come together in our particularly unique way, in a way that really allows this we that we have to have a life of its own. And it's sort of the we's life of its own and the patterns or structures of that manifestation that Zone 4 reveals. So it is more difficult in that sense to inhabit, and that's probably because it's a knowledge by a distance. So it's still about a we, it's still about, you know, the lower left quadrant, which most of us experience is pretty close and fairly intimate, but it's a stepping back from that, and it's a stepping back that also adds that component of time or history, either forward or back. So it requires more of us than a simple, what are we feeling right now? You bring your awareness to that, Zone 3. It's much more immediate, known by acquaintance. It's much more present, and a Zone 4 is stepping back. Now, a Zone 4 doesn't have to be complex then. It can be complex. The descriptions we see from Zone 4, described from Zone 4, can be really complex, depending on how much they're accounting for. But we could simply say that if Ali and I are experiencing a certain sort of shared meaning arising right now, that either he or I or both of us could step right back to sort of a Zone 4 and recognize that particular instance of shared meaning as existing in our awareness and sort of a larger pattern or structure of the relationship as a particular instantiation of an internality code that we are otherwise aware of. Now, we're probably aware of it because of our past intersections, but we can simply step into a Zone 4 perspective, look at this moment of shared lower left intersection, and recognize an aspect of the internality code that exists between us or within our we as being lit up or present or in awareness. And that's a Zone 4 in sort of a more simple way. She brings up this point here about, because I've not really studied the methodologies. Now, yes, that's partially true. I mean, these zones do tend for most people to start to make more sense in some sense after we study the methodologies. But on the same token, I've actually seen that become more of a problem. And I'm not suggesting we don't study the methodologies. I'm suggesting that methodologies and sort of zones as event horizons are not the same thing at all. And they require us, there's sort of two areas to get familiar with, two areas to get both cognitively and experientially familiar with. And when you study the methodologies, or if you only study the methodologies, or if you focus more so on the methodologies, and I've seen this, the JFK program particularly likes to focus a lot more on the methodologies. I've worked with students who've had that sort of training, as it were, who get really sort of out of touch in a distorted way with these base or simple or fundamental notions. And I don't mean simple as in easy, but base notions of zones as event horizons. So we're really working on both sides of the spectrum. And when you study the methodologies, what you're most learning there is the particular paradigms and injunctions that humans have for some reason been doing that elucidate one of these zones typically more so than others. It's not to say that methodologies don't, and they almost all do, as far as I've discovered in studying them. They all get at and use way more than just one zone. And to say that a methodology is like a one-to-one relation with the zone is really an orienting generalization to just have us see that particular sets of human injunctions do tend over time, when looked at generally, to focus their elucidating efforts more so on one zone. As you saw in this lesson with like Foucault and Heidegger, they both looked at the lower left, and they both looked, among other quadrants, don't get me wrong, but they focused on the lower left in large parts of their career. And they both looked at the lower left through Zone 3 and Zone 4, but it just so happens that, you know, from an orienting, generalizing perspective, we could say that one tended towards Zone 3, the other towards Zone 4. And that's typical with our sort of review of methodologies in AQUIL, and you'll also see that next week with Natron and Varela and Lumen, and to say Lumen, oh, he's a Zone 7 guy. I mean, that one's probably the clearest where, because very few people have actually looked solidly at Zone 7, but to say that Lumen only looked at Zone 7 or through Zone 7 as a perspective is false. He very much didn't. He very much, where the critiques actually come up for him is too much Zone 8, reductionism, saying, compared to Habermas, but between him and Habermas, lower left and lower right, they actually both looked at, over the course of their career, at the lower left and lower right in turn. But yes, it would be fair to say that Habermas focused more on the life world or lower left, and Lumen more on the structural functionalist aspects of a system or lower right. So again, all that's to say, and we can get more into the methodologies and some of these other questions, but all that's to say that understanding these sort of zones as event horizons, experiencing those boundaries as event horizons, is a different set of concerns, generally speaking, than getting at these through the lens of methodologies. And then when it comes to the last part of the question here, or the second to last part, about when I'm doing inhabiting these dimension perspectives, I cannot avoid doing so from the perspective of myself. This is a tricky issue, and I'll even comment on it as well. But there's sort of two things that are coming up for me here. One is the notion of taking perspectives, which is how this question sort of started off and was headed. And I'll talk about that in a second. And the other is this notion of sort of all of this arising as an aspect of or a manifestation of the upper left. And that sort of, and this isn't what I think Glistening's proposing, as it were. I think I'm hearing just a sort of an experiential reporting of, wait a second, it sort of feels like this is all kind of coming through my upper left. But to say that in a stronger way, that it is from the lower left, or it reduces to the lower left, or to some form of extreme sort of idealism, which is a reductionism that tends to get us in trouble, and that it absolutizes the upper left quadrant. And what we're recognizing here is that you are a sentient being. And yes, your awareness, you know, as it spreads across all eight zones and all, and remember, there's four lower zones, aren't just about you. They're about the intersections that you have with other individual holons as you create social holons. And there's hundreds and hundreds of those that you're part of. So there's no sort of static nature of you as an individual holon with these sort of quadrants and these zones. Now, in the upper quadrants, those are basically, yes, they're about you. In the lower quadrants, we're talking about hundreds of different social holons that you're simultaneously a member of, and switching your awareness between each of those. If you were going to diagram that, I think we did in the course where we show all those semicircles in the bottom quadrants, it gets really complex really quickly. So, yes, sort of what's driving this is you, you know, the essence of your individual holon. And yes, most of us would like to say that that individual holon is like most deeply instantiated in the upper left or zone one. And while I don't disagree with how that can come to feel like it's the case, I think it simply is the case, because we just, zone one is so intimate. It's just our interior as we know it uniquely from the inside, and no one else can know it from the inside like we know it from the inside. So it just carries that sort of weight by virtue of how it is that that horizon is disclosed. But, you know, zone three is equally a part of your identity. It equally defines your perspectival sort of manifestation in the world. Then when it comes to actually taking perspectives, this is where we add another set of distinctions. This is where I've done a lot of my individual work in Aqua, and also where my PhD research is going. So there's a lot to say here. I'll keep it generally short, and we can talk more about perspectives at some other point. But when you're talking about taking these individual holons and these social holons and lining them up together in what I just like to call perspectival chains, and that's simply to say, like, what's Clint's perspective on Ali's interior? So, or what's Clint's perspective on Ali's sort of view of how Glistening is likely feeling if she's listening to the call or listening to the recording? Or we could say, doesn't have to be about feeling, it could be about behavior. What's Clint's perspective on Ali's behavior right now? Well, that's a difficult perspective for me to take because we're on the phone and I can't see his behavior right now, but I can sort of guess at how he's behaving, and I can take perspectives on that. till the cows come home if I want. My point here is that when we do this actual human perspective taking, we're working with basically chains of subjects and objects. Okay? So Clint, as a perspective taking subject, and this is where I play a bigger role, kind of with things like, doesn't this all start with me as far as the perspective of work that I'm doing? Yes. In that sense, it does start with you. But if you're going to partake a perspective on the shape of this cup sitting here on my desk, or on the color of the sky as I look outside this hotel window, or at my own interior right now as it's arising, or at my perspective on someone else's interior or exterior, or my perspective on this group of that's in this course and our shared interiors and exteriors, that perspectival chain starts with me as the perspective-taking subject. And then it can either run through other subjects, right? So Clint's perspective, of Ali's perspective, of some other thing. But at the end of the day, it eventually ends at some, what I like to call, perspectival object. And that object is some dimension, an upper left dimension, a lower right dimension, etc. So the quadrant sort of define that object. And that object, or that dimension, is seen through a particular view or mode. Now, that's what Ken calls it. You can get more of Ken's view on this in the appendix about the integral calculus. I'm not recommending that per se. It's pretty advanced, and we're going to walk folks through it in course three. When I say I'm not recommending it, I mean if you're struggling with the heart of Glistening's question here for yourself, the calculus for most people will just confuse that more, unless you're really strange like me and actually can garner a deeper understanding through the complex mathematical notations. Go ahead, give it a shot if you want. Otherwise, we'll walk everybody through the calculus in zone three, in course three, and really just take it step by step by step. But I was saying that perspectival object is seen through what's called a viewer mode. And that viewer mode is a zone. It's an inside or an outside view or a mode. So I can take a perspective of Ali's interior as he sees it, as he experiences it from the inside. And to note that those perspectival expressions are always set up in equations implied, where it's like, am I seeing Ali's interior as he's viewing it from the inside the same way that he's viewing his own interior from the inside? And clearly we know, because we're talking about zone one or inside of an interior, that those are never going to totally equal each other, because I can't see Ali's interior and know it from the inside as he does. But it doesn't mean I can't try. It doesn't mean I can't sort of take everything I know about Ali and our relationship and sort of approximate a sense of it. I just have to recognize that that's what I'm doing. So my point here is that when we're working with actual human perspective taking and these chains of subjects, which always starts with a perspective taking subject, which for you is always going to be you. Even if you're interested in someone else's perspective, what's Ali's perspective on the Republican debate the other night? If I'm asking that, and if I'm taking that perspective, it starts with me. Even if I don't reference myself, it's my view of Ali's view of how he felt about the Republican debate last night. So that's where the yourself as a first-person perspective taker shows up sort of in first position. And then you drive your awareness through other subjects toward an object dimension, which may or may not, depending on, I'm positing, your degree of development, be able to be fleshed out as being seen from a inside or outside view. So the point there is not so much for you guys to understand and get a sense of, you know, the work I've done with perspective taking, which, to be clear, is built off of Ken's work with the integral calculus. It's to flesh out this notion of zones as perspectives, zones as event horizons, as views, from how that the zones show up in actual perspective taking with subjects and objects. So I'll probably stop there, Ali, and see if you have anything to add, and then we can see if Glistening's on the phone.
Yeah, and I'll actually just start off by saying, yeah, my response to that second part of the question was virtually identical to everything you mentioned. And I'll just very briefly run through it, because I know you also have to get off the phone. in not too long from now, because you have some family business to attend to.
I have an hour and a half hard stop today, more or less.
Yeah. And so basically, ultimately, what Clint is saying is, another way Ken lines it up in integral spirituality, if you don't want to refer to the excerpt online, the complex mathematical exposition that Ken does on Appendix B of Excerpt C, in integral spirituality, Ken kind of just points to it by dividing it in quadrant, quadrivia, domain. So when glistening is asking, as it is versus as I see it, the first thing that comes up for me is basically, let's first make a distinction between, there's two ends we can approach this from, but the simplest way, I think, is to first look at it from the fact that the as it is piece, when it comes to perspectives or taking perspectives, the as it is piece is inseparable from the as I see it piece, but also irreducible to it, because the domain you're enacting, when I tell you take a third person view of your body, you're able to do it, but it still feels like you are taking it, as in you, the person taking it, is not necessarily just this perspective, but are taking that perspective, that view, that mode, or that mode of enactment, or that inactive perspective. And in turn, that inactive perspective is disclosing a very real domain, dimension, or perspective of your individual holon, which is your body. So the view or mode of enactment that you're embodying and taking, and the domain or the dimension or the perspective that's in turn disclosed, this is an inseparable relation, the perspective you're taking and the domain disclosed. And ultimately, there's one term missing in there. I've only included perspective you're taking and domain disclosed. But the term missing at the beginning that Clint pointed to is that in perspectival calculus or any notation of perspectives or even any conceptualization of perspectives, it gets traced back to the individual making the claim. So if it's you that's taking a third-person view of your third-person exterior body, then we start with that. We start with the first person, you. And Ken says, the first term defines the space in which this is occurring. The second term defines the mode or perspective or the inactive view that you're taking, or the quadrivia that you're taking. And the third term describes the domain dimension or the perspective dimension that's disclosed in relation to the perspective you're taking. So this gets a little complex, but at bottom, there's sort of like this inseparable, irreducible relationship between as it is and as I see it. Because nothing, when you say as it is, the whole point about perspectives is nothing is lying out there in a perspective-free fashion. You're only able to comprehend things or register things in a set of perspectival relations. This doesn't mean to be is to be perceived. This isn't subjective idealism. It's just a way of saying that the as it is of something, the asness of something, is inseparable from the perspective through which you're looking, and the perspective through which you're looking is inseparable from the fact that it's always a first person looking through that perspective. But once again, this first person looking through that perspective is he or herself already a four-quadrant affair, whether you perceive that from the get-go or not. Whether you perceive it or not, that first-person space in which this is occurring is already a tetra-structured space. As in, also don't confuse what the perspectives are with what you can disclose about perspectives in sequential space and time. And the reason I'm saying is, even that first term, oh, it's happening in glistening's awareness, it's happening all in her first person. What does that mean? Well, that first person is already, and actually the four quadrants disclosing, or four quadrants mutually arising, or actually the eight, that first person is already indexically disclosed with the eight primordial perspectives, such that when I ask you to take, let's say, a zone two view of yourself, if you do a genuine zone two study of yourself, the domain you're disclosing is real. You really get to see that actually in your awareness, you get to bring in things into your awareness that are always outside of your awareness to begin with, that pre-structure your awareness by the time it arises. So in a way, you've seen the as it is of things and you've always seen them through your perspective, through you taking a perspective, but what's disclosed is real, is that what you took to be an isolated I hanging out here is actually an eightfold phenomenon, or the tetra rising and tetra enacting of the four quadrants. But I'll leave it at that. And the only reason I wanted to mention it was kind of like a summary plus supplement to Clint's, what Clint said.
No, that was good. I'm glad I missed the as it is part and as I see it. That was excellent. And that's important just for everybody listening. Not that you don't think what Ali says is important, but if you find it to be what he's saying here to be really advanced, well, it is. I mean, these are difficult concepts. I mean, glistening's really getting to the heart of some of these issues. And two things on that. One, it's totally fine if you're not getting this. It's totally fine if you're in a space where glistening is and you're struggling with this. Or now it's fine if you're even struggling with it more because of what Ali and I just answered. And we apologize if that's the case. But it also sort of requires us to go in this direction to sort of getting deeper with this as things start to merge into clarity. So obviously we have this recorded, and this is something we can return to as you contemplate these notions over time and do recognize that over time piece is a really important aspect to this.